Call the meeting to order. Mayor Grasp is running late. I'm going to gladly hand this over to him when he gets off. So we need to determine if we have a quorum.
We do.
Okay. Audience participation.
We have none.
None today? All right. Let's look at the minutes of May 19th. We need a motion.
Second.
And would you please make sure you say where you're from when you make your motion?
Right, Mara. Frank Harris, good for his count.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, staff reports. The first one is the financial progress report. Attachment 3A in your packet. And Curtis Baker.
Yeah, thank you. So if I can find my copy of it. This is basically, as many of you might know, this is the end of the year for AMAPS, or I should say June 30th was the end of the year, so we're starting a new fiscal year. So this is kind of the year end. As you'll see, we expended about 87% of the budget, have about $121,000 of carryover, which we can spend for the next 6 months. I'd be happy to answer any questions if there are any.
No questions? And Mr. President's motion. Okay, motion to approve?
Motion.
Are there any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We're moving on. Thank you. Technical progress report. Dr. Curtis?
All right. Thank you. Two items that I wanted to bring to your attention, both of which I had sent an email about after our technical progress, after our technical advisory committee meeting last Thursday. The first was more just for an information. Our sister agency down in Morphe in Columbus has been pushing and had found some congressmen in the state, or state congressmen, including Steve Hambly from Medina, to support House Bill 528, which would allow communities and counties to add $15 to their license plate fees, add an additional $15. We thought that this was something we just wanted to put on everyone's radar, especially as we've talked about things like increasing the gas tax or increasing revenues. This is one of those small ways that I think could help communities and might be something that, you know, if I know that most of the state is on recess right now. If, you know, it is time, if you are speaking to them, this might be something worth bringing up. We did send that out with the link to the actual bill language last week. The second one, which is a little bit more concerning, although I don't want to be chicken little, is there is right now ruling out from a draft rule from FTA and FHWA that's called MPO reform. This reform basically is proposing that MPOs should follow the boundaries of their urbanized areas, where typically in Ohio we include the urbanized area, but we use counties as sort of the cutoffs between agencies. So, you know, NOAACA has five counties, we have two counties, Stark has one county. Oh, technically, we have two and a little bit of Chippewa. I don't want to leave you guys out. but so what this would actually do is look at the urbanized area instead and require that if your community was part of an urbanized area, you have to be part of that metropolitan planning organization. The big fallout from this is more from the north. It would include Hudson, Streetsboro, Aurora, Twinsburg. I don't believe Richfield actually falls into that in the urbanized area. I think part of Richfield does. But what it would also create would be communities that could potentially have to be in two metropolitan planning organizations. So, you know, Summit County would potentially have to represent Summit County at AMATS and at NOAACA. And Portage County would potentially have to represent Portage County in Youngstown, in Canton, and in Akron. So it's, yeah, and then for the RTAs, it would be the exact same thing because the RTAs are countywide.
Wait, does that mean double the money?
No, in fact, what it actually would mean is that we would probably, our population right now is set up is about 705,000. The Akron urbanized area is a little bit over 500,000. So our budget would actually decrease, most likely, including our SCP allocations, et cetera. But, I mean, and honestly, I think most importantly, it's just, you know, this agency has been around as constructed for 50 years. And I think, you know, the county system for us has worked really well. We have a great, I think, great idea of what cooperation means and how to do that and work together. So it is something that we're concerned about. ODOT is also concerned about it. They're actually going to be introducing, it looks like they're willing to comment actually on this draft ruling, which we did include on your mail out, or I sent in the, did we include it in the folders? Yeah, so they're in the folders. It's ODOT's comments, and quite frankly, I don't think we could even say it any better than what they have said in terms of some of the confusion that it's going to create, and especially when there's no real answer of how this is going to make things better. So they're going to be, ODOT's going to be sharing this with the Association of Regional Councils, which we're a part of tomorrow. And I do believe, Tony, the intent is for them to submit this these comments to the federal government.
Correct? Yeah, correct, Curtis. And I think it summed up best. I did speak to Jennifer Connelly from Planning and Research yesterday, who combined this. I don't have a problem getting it out today because, again, it's going to be presented officially to the ORCFED group tomorrow. But if you go to the second page at the bottom, I mean, there is a voluntary decision-making process that we have within here. If anybody would want to leave, there goes somebody else, or no act, or vice versa, it could happen right now. But the best line is truly the last paragraph. The revisions to the planning program that try to resolve the problem that does not exist in Ohio. So that's our stance as a department. Hope everything works out and goes through. And as they say very often, Lynn, here, and repeating what Curtis said, I mean, this is generally everything's working fine here. There's no reason to upset the apple cart. And if anybody would want to move, I think they could move now without mandating. So I don't believe, I'm not a historian, but I don't think that has happened too much in my 25 years of dealing with both the Lackland and the Madison State statute.
Yeah, and I just the last thing that, you know, so when we brought this up to our technical advisory committee, they made a motion for us to inform the policy committee and recommend to the policy committee that the committee, authorize the staff to write a comment to Federal Highway and FTA saying that this is, you know, kind of echoing, I think, a lot of the comments that are here with ODOT saying that, you know, things are working the way they are. It's not something that we believe is necessary for, in the state of Ohio, and we don't really see the benefit of this. So that was a suggestion by the technical committee, and I just wanted to also lay that out for the policy committee.
Curtis, do you need a motion for you to go ahead and do that?
Yeah, I think that would be appropriate. I think I would feel comfortable with that, yeah.
Well, I would make a motion that this organization, as a group, send a letter down in support of the same, I don't know how to word it, but the same as what ODOT is doing. So we're on the same page.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Anything else?
All right. No, thank you, and we'll move on to the next item.
All right. Next, we have Dave Foulet. He's going to talk about the Annex Federal Funds Report, which is attachment 3C in the packet.
Sorry about that. Back at the office, all I do is hit F5 and it does what it's supposed to do. Sorry about that. Fiscal 2016 is over. We're into the third week of fiscal year 2017, and I just wanted to highlight a couple things from 2016. First of all, it was one of our best years ever for AMAC spending. We spent over $30 million on projects, And this was made possible by over-programming and by borrowing some extra money from other MPOs. Even despite all those efforts, we still have a balance of around $6 million for fiscal year 16. And that was mostly because of two reasons. First, early in the year, we had projects that were coming in under the estimate, and then later in the fourth quarter, we had projects that were lacking bidders and that were coming in higher. So a couple of our big jobs, one was in Streetsboro, Frost Road, and then there was a Metro Parks trail job got bumped into 17. So those two projects alone accounted for about $5 million. Some of our larger projects that we funded in I just wanted to highlight a couple of our larger projects in 2016. East Summit Street in Kent is well underway. That was about $6 million. The Interbelt in Akron is also underway. That was we had $5 million in that project. And then West Exchange and West Cedar Street road diet and reconstruction and signals in Akron was $4.4 million. And if that job hasn't started, it's supposed to very soon. Looking ahead to 2017, we'll have actually a little less money to put into projects because we'll have to pay back the loans that we had in 16. So we'll have a little less money to actually put into projects. And we also want to really try hard to limit fourth projects because it just seems like bad things tend to happen when we have projects programmed late in the game. And also we have a new policy funding subcommittee that's going to review some of our policies with funding, and hopefully we'll have some new and fresh ideas come out of that. And that's all I have. If
there's any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them. Okay. Anybody? Thank you, Dave. We don't have any old business, I understand, from Curtis. So new business, moving on to Krista, with the 2016 bike plan, attachment 5A in the packet.
Analyses and what the recommendations were. The main purpose of this is really to evaluate the needs of the regional bike system. Our goals were really looking at how to make it safe, connected, and friendly. And those are themes that were echoed from the pedestrian plan that was passed earlier this year. I'm really looking at the bicycle network as a whole and how to encourage more bicycling in the region and also how to make it safer. And the recommendations that are in here are eligible for inclusion in the upcoming regional transportation plan, which we'll be working on, and that will be approved this spring. So we've made quite a bit of progress since 2000. In 2000, we had 80 miles of trails, and now we have 108, and as far as bike lanes, we've added about 10 miles. So we do keep increasing. This is just a map of the bike lanes are in purple. So as you can see, they're still kind of scattered, but we are getting a more network. And also, the existing trails are really starting to connect, and we're really looking at what are those last mile connections and how to really work, look at the bike lanes and the trails and the system as a whole. This shows the crashes. And, you know, one thing we're looking at is a lot of them are still very scattered. There isn't a whole lot of analysis that looking at, you know, how these relate to either the roads or the trails. So, you know, we are starting to look at this type of data more and try to analyze it for future needs and safety issues. One thing we looked at was looking at what types of facilities, different types of cyclists are interested in order to better allocate the funding to encourage cycling. So one of the major studies, which originated in Portland, Oregon, but has been repeated several times and is now being used quite a bit, is looking at these types of cyclists. And it kind of breaks it down into four categories. There's about less than 1% of the population who's your strong and fearless, and they'll ride anywhere on anything. They're good to go. And then there's about 7% that are enthused and confident. So, you know, they like a bike lane, but they feel pretty comfortable. They're, you know, a lot of the people you see on the road a lot. There's about 33% of the people who, no matter what you do, say, I'm not going to get on a bike. No way, no how, not interested. But it's this middle group that's about 60% that they're interested but concerned. You know, that's probably like a lot of people. You know, you may have a bike in the garage, you may not. You may ride trails. That's the majority of the people that, if we're looking to increase biking, that's the audience that is typically really needs to be targeted. And a lot of those people like your separated facilities, you know, whether that's a trail or whether that's a shared use path on the side of the road. So just kind of looking at, if we're trying to get people to bike more, what types of facilities are those people want in order to bike, and trying to match that up with the projects that we're funding. So like I mentioned, safety is one of our large concerns. So the plan highlights just a lot of different things, such as the new walk signal that's at Britton Road on the top right, different bike lanes, wide shoulders. In the top left, the Copley Road, Road Diet, and Ashram. And so different things that are in our area, but then are also being done at other places to increase safety. And connectivity, you know, really looking at how to get people from the trails into downtown, how to connect neighborhoods to bike facilities. The top left is Barberton, a new trail connector that will connect into downtown. The top right is the Esplanade and Kent. State Road is the bottom left, and Cuyahoga Falls. So really looking at, you know, getting people to destinations and providing those facilities. And then friendly. And we've got, I think, a lot of really good examples of, from artistic bike racks to wayfinding, and just different things that encourage people to bike, also help them get around, and overall just show, I think, community support that bicycles are welcome and being encouraged and things. So you've got different signage, air tires to pump up air, you know, and then like I said, Kent and Akron have both done a lot with artistic bike racks, using them kind of as a fun public art that's also functional, but it also highlights some of the local businesses. That's a non-trademarked Mr. Peanut in front of the peanut shop in Akron. So looking at recommendations, and there's general ones and a map that's in your packet. The general ones look at things more like broader policy, like how complete streets policies, or looking at some of the bike-friendly city and community plans that are out there that can help encourage communities to do that. And then we looked at specific recommendations, mainly focused on those trails and shared use paths. Particularly focusing on making some of those connections, things like making sure the Freedom Trail, you know, connects all the way into the towpath, or I guess I'll go to the map, sorry, or like in near Middlebury Road where the Freedom Trail comes into the Portage Hike and Bike, kind of between Talmadge and Kent. You know, there's a narrow bridge, you know, it's, you know, not too far of a connection, but that's a very important connection to make it safe and encourage people to bike. At TAC, we did have several comments of things that needed to be included. Those were Twinsburg, Hiram, and Barberton, so we made sure that those were all in there. We also received several emails, so we've made a few additions, just making sure we have all of the funded trails And all of those recommendations that are on the community's kind of upcoming plans. And again, these will be eligible to be included into the regional plan, but that has to be fiscally constrained, but this does not. The plan was taken to our Citizens Involvement Committee twice over this spring, and then we has been available on our website and for social media, and we incorporated all the comments that we got since past. So if you have any interest in any questions, if you have them.
And Chris, I might add too that just also, because we kind of run into this a little bit, just because if a trail comes up between now and when we're developing the plan and it's not on this map, that's not a big deal. You know, the important thing is to make sure that we have it when we do our regional plan to identify it. So if, you know, all of a sudden something bubbles up that we, you know, is unforeseen in this plan is more of like kind of the, you know, giving us a good list to pull from, but doesn't keep the project out of it if it's not on this list. So just to make that clear that if there are other things that come up, you know, as long as you let us know, we can put them in the pipeline.
Any further questions? We would entertain a motion to approve the 2016 bike plan. Moved by Mr. Wallace.
Second.
We have a second by Mr. Judge. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed the same. Hearing none, motion carries. Thank you. Moving on, new business. 5B, higher preservation needs. Amy Prater.
Estimated based on lane miles,
and the cost estimates by lane mile were provided by ODOT in $2016. And this is our pavement resurfacing assumptions. You can see the lengths of each type of functional class, and then we took how many lane miles, we multiplied that times two resurfacings over the course of the plan. We multiplied it times the cost per lane mile, and then we came up with a cost of $1.17 billion. That's just for resurfacing. For pavement replacement, we took the lane mileage, multiplied it times the 5%, got also cost from ODOT, multiplied it out, and we have $0.15 billion. For bridge preservation, these are all the bridges that we have in Summit Portage and our portion of Wayne County. We calculated for bridges, and we also calculated for turnpike bridges within our service area. And our total of that area is a little over 7 million square feet. For preservation, we took costs from ODOT of $30 per square foot for painting the structure, and we assumed that would be done every 17 years. The same thing for deck overlay every 17 years at a cost of $43. Deck replacement was $136, assumed every 50 years. And superstructure replacement, $163 a square foot, assumed every 80 years. The costs were estimated by dividing by the 25 years between now and the end of the plan, and then multiplying by the frequency above. Bridge preservation, we took the square footage and multiplied it times the ratio, and then times the cost per square foot, and we came up with about $1.9 billion. So in summary, we have pavement resurfacing at $1.17 billion, pavement replacement at $0.15 billion, and preservation at $1.9 billion, which is a total cost of approximately $3.22 billion just to maintain our current system between now and 2040, and that is all in $2016. This estimate will be subtracted from our future projected revenues to determine how much would be available for operational and other expansion projects in the plan. Any questions?
This is a very good report. We will know this Metro uses a lot of these roads. And it's really important that they are in good shape, because a lot of times transit buses get pretty bad when there are a lot of issues with the roadways and bridges. Thank you for this report. Question about the projected cost. Is there a way to annualize that cost and maybe look at the first 5 years as opposed to just look at the whole horizon?
Yeah. I think that we do the whole horizon for this, and then for the plan, we have to break down the costs into actual projects to fiscally constrain between now and the end of the plan. So I think in the plan itself, when we start to try to figure out what can be fiscally constrained, we have more of like a short, mid, and long-term plan for projects. And I think that's kind of when the costs kind of get settled, how much we're going to spend in the short, medium, and long-term.
Okay, that's part of the transportation improvement.
That's part of our plan.
And that's where we are required, once we get to our planning process, to include inflation rates.
Yeah.
So this number now ends up being, you know, even bigger. And that's what I was just going to say, was just, you know, that we're talking about, what, 25% of our local roadways is what we're really talking about for that $3.2 billion number. And, I mean, this doesn't include a lot of, I mean, you know, we're assuming this is just resurfacing and replacement, so this isn't chip seal, you know, crack, all that kind of stuff that I think a lot of you are doing already. This is just, if you look at all of your main federal roadways that you have in your community, you know, this is the type of cost we're talking about. And so I think that's when we talk about revenues and issues and, you know, the gas tax and all those issues. This is what AMS deals with, what ODOT deals with. I'm trying to, you know, stay ahead of it. And It's a real challenge, but I think it's even more of a real challenge for local communities because we're looking at 25%, and you guys are looking at 100%. And so it, I think it just kind of is one way to illustrate some of the challenges that we have.
And we actually did receive a comment in TAC that even though in the report it specifically states, you know, we do not fund local roadways, there was a comment made that maybe we need to basically drive that point home a little more. So at the very end, the very last page of my attachment, there's just been a paragraph added at the end, and just to reinforce that just because, you know, we do have a sizable amount of money, that's a sizable amount of money, but that does not cover local roadways, you know what I mean? And so there's still a financial burden above that and beyond for all of our members, so. Any other questions?
Thank you. We need to entertain a motion to approve the highway preservation needs.
So moved.
So moved by Bobby.
Second,
Mr. Shar. Seconded by Mr. Harrison. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed to say. Hearing none, motion carries. Moving forward, 5C, driving venture forward, an oral presentation by Alex Barnos.
Barnos. Thank you. Do you mind if I speak from here? I'd like to move the house. Everybody here, if I do that. So we're calling this project, this is an 18-month look at our entire line service transit system driving Metro forward. And this really is an outgrowth of a request from our leadership and from our board. When we were going through last year's budgeting process, we were looking at changing some things with our workforce routes, our number one and our number two, West Market Street and South Arlington Street. And we realized that we would need a lot of schedule work, a lot of labor work, a lot of education of our customers, and our board sort of said, well, if you're going to go through all of that, think bigger. Think about how to improve ridership across our system, because for many years our ridership has been flat to slightly declining, and our costs have been going up. And so what I'm about to show you is the result of that sort of bigger thinking. We're about 9 months into the 18-month process, and I will move quickly through this, but I hope to be able to present, you know, 8 or 9 months of hard work by a number of folks in that time. So I always like to start out with Metro's mission. This project particularly is focused on the dependable, the cost-effective, and the customer-focused aspects of providing public transit to Summit County. So in April of this year, we took five sort of big ideas out to the public and said, are these big ideas the sort of transit system that you would like to see? From those 13 public meetings, we had three themes that arose time and time again. We also heard these same three themes from our operators, from our customer service staff, from our other frontline staff. And those three themes were to increase service frequency. And I should back up just a second and say that when I say service frequency or when I say the word headway, that is minutes in between buses at a particular place. So a bus comes every 30 minutes, a bus comes every 40 minutes, something like that is a headway. To simplify our schedules and get to clock-based headways, so when we had our sort of budget crisis in the early 2000s, we scheduled all of our bus routes very tightly. If a route took 34 minutes to run, we scheduled it every 34 minutes. And that results in a very efficient system, but it also results in a system that customers can't remember. You always have to look at a schedule because who can remember and do math about every 34 minutes or 34 minutes and then 27 minutes and 28 minutes. The third thing we heard all the time was to increase service span, so increase our trips in the evenings and in the weekends. We've been hearing these for years. It's not really a secret. And so when our board challenged us to think big, to break apart the schedule, to look at how we could improve the system as a whole, these are the places that we went to. So when we talk about our service, the easiest way to break it down is in revenue hours. So our biggest expense is the operator driving the bus. Their wages, their benefits, all that's rolled into having an operator out on a bus. So we usually estimate costs based on revenue hours, the time that the bus driver is in the seat operating the bus taking passengers. Right now, we operate about 1,020 revenue hours on a weekday throughout the metro system. So when the board said, great, we want to increase service frequency, increase service span, get the clock face headways, do all that, but don't spend any more money. We said, okay, we have 1,020 hours. How can we move those around to get a better bang for our buck? The places that we looked were duplicated service, places where we have multiple buses running on the same street at the same time or within a couple blocks of each other. Unproductive trips and segments, places that maybe we shouldn't be taking a 40-foot transit bus, or places that we shouldn't be taking a 40-foot transit bus at certain times of the day because there aren't that many riders there. And the third place that systems look at when they do reorganizations like this is schedule efficiency. I just mentioned our schedule is very efficient. We didn't find a lot of hours in that category, but we did find some. So these were the five big ideas we took out to the public in April. And we presented them just as sort of big ideas. How would you match service to modern travel patterns? What are we doing now that made sense in the past that doesn't make sense anymore? And they were just these sort of amorphous ideas. And we basically got a sign-off from our public and from our frontline staff on these ideas. So we started to put together a proposal that matches to these big picture ideas. At the back of your packet, there's an FAQ sheet and there's a front and back side map. I'll refer to that front and back side of the map a couple times throughout the presentation. The front side of the map is our current service, again with those headways or frequencies, how often the bus comes on a particular route. And the reverse is what we're proposing, again with those frequencies. So keep that in front of you. It'll probably help you get the picture of what we're talking about. So the first guiding principle is to match service to modern travel patterns. So this is a graph of ridership on the number one West Market inbound. So our bus will come from Montrose all the way down Market Street into downtown. Each column is a trip time. So the time is at the bottom in military, 4:49 a.m., 5:41 a.m. The bar goes up to how many seats on the bus were filled on that trip. And you can see the seated capacity of our 40-foot buses and our big articulated accordion buses. When are the buses the most full? In the evening, when the trips are far apart. So 5:30 p.m., we don't have another bus until 6:44 p.m. When they're 70 minutes apart, the demand builds up. What's interesting about this is that if you were to graph this same graph for freeway volume or for a transit system in a larger city with more of a commute pattern on the transit system, it would have a big peak in the morning, come down in the middle afternoon, peak again after school and work, and tail off into the evening. We don't see that traditional commuting pattern in Akron with our metro riders. And we believe that this is because a lot of our riders work non-traditional schedules, service industry, retail, multiple jobs. They're out and about all the time. So in the evening, where previously we could get away with tapering off service in the evening hours, now we build up a bunch of demands. So keep in mind these evening hours, they'll come back around in a few slides. So what the proposal on the reverse map indicates is that we'd be providing consistent service on these main routes from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. and slightly reduced service from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. consistent. The second place we're looking to match to our patterns and our demands are in the suburban service category. So this graph below here is for the 102 that runs up to Northfield right now. The trips, the outbound trips, 5:30 a.m. leaving the transit center, 6:15 a.m. leaving the transit center, 6:30 inbound, which would be from the Roxino, 7:20 inbound. What you can see, I should explain a little further. So these are the total boardings on that trip for the month of April 2016. Divide that by 21 weekdays, and and take those same people by the cost for running that trip. So we charge $1.25 for a one-way fare. And we all know that public transit is essentially a public good. We subsidize it to a certain level. Many of these trips are doing what a suburban reverse commute type of trip should be doing. Early in the morning outbound, in the afternoon coming inbound, we're moving those suburban reverse commute type of workers. Later in the morning, later in the evening, these buses are essentially empty. Two people a day, one people, one person a day, three people a day. Sometimes less than a person a day on that 10:50 inbound trip. When you carry less than a person a day for a trip that costs us about $130 to provide, that level of subsidy just gets unsustainable. So what we're proposing to do for these suburban-type routes is limit their hours to the hours where they really are useful for that reverse commute. Right now, we spend 116 hours of our 1,020 in these purely suburban categories, running down to Green, up to Twinsburg, up to Northfield, up to Richfield. We're looking at limiting those types of suburban services to about 54 revenue hours a day. We think that we'll be able to keep the important trips and cut the ones that are at an unsustainable level with that level of service. The same place we see this sort of pattern, we see another instance of this sort of pattern on our circulator routes. So this is the same graph for a Montrose circulator. Has a lot of trips per day. During the business day, does about what it's supposed to do. In the evening and into the late night, it's essentially empty. Bringing back around those 1750, so 550, 6 o'clock, 645 numbers, where the number one is over full, standing loads, there's less than a person per day on the number 50. That bus should be somewhere where it's doing more good, moving more people, if we're being good stewards of our Summit County tax dollars. So we propose to reduce the number of service hours on circulator service and put it into those mainline service categories. So we're in a great place today to talk about duplicated service because we're right on this map. So where all these lines in our current system come together is Goodyear Boulevard and East Market Street. So right now we've got the number 5, the number 6, the 19, the 110, and a couple blocks down the number 5 joins up. They all travel down East Market Street into downtown Akron. When they're going or coming from a pulse lineup, sometimes these buses are running back to back. They're not providing additional service, they're duplicating service. So what we're proposing is a series of neighborhood transit hubs, 2-3 miles outside of downtown, where neighborhood routes could be consolidated, come together, and we would ask our customers to transfer to a high-frequency bus that would move them into the rest of downtown. So this bus on West Market Street would depart from somewhere right around here. We're looking for sites currently where we can do these on-street transfers initially, and eventually perhaps off-street facilities like what we have up in Chapel Hill and out at Rolling Acres. We don't know where those would be yet. We're talking with city engineers, with city planners, with mayors, and looking for those locations for the future. I think that's one of the biggest questions about this plan, but we're working on it. And so from an area like this, or from Wallhaven, or from the Portage Crossing type area, we have a bus every 20 minutes into the downtown transit center. Those are those bold yellow lines. The other place we're looking, the other way we're trying to strengthen network structure is to allow for connections that don't come into our downtown transit center. So currently we run what's called a radial system. Almost everything in the metro system comes to downtown. People are able to transfer and go back out. What we hear a lot of is, I live in West Akron, north of Rolling Acres, south of Copley Road. I want to go shopping out on West Market Street. I have to ride downtown, back out of the number one. It takes me 2 hours to go to the grocery store. How can we fix this? So one thing that we propose in the new proposal of system is a north-south crosstown route that basically just travels Hawkins Avenue. It would connect six of those radial routes and take some of the lower productivity segments from the number 3 and the number 4 and incorporate that. The other place that we can simplify is, again, our schedule. Like I mentioned, right now, we have every trip scheduled to basically exactly how long it takes. The way that most transit systems schedule are to look at the trip length, how long it takes the bus to actually travel it, round up to a round number. So we would be looking to get all of our what are called cycle times, the time for an outbound trip, the time for an inbound trip, plus the recovery time for the driver to use the restroom, etc. Establish that cycle time and round up to something that's divisible by either 20 or 30 minutes. If we did that, we would end up with, depending on the number of buses on a route, a number of 20-minute corridors, 30-minute corridors, 40-minute corridors, and the lowest level of service for weekdays would be an hour. We did this every 2 hours. All of those radial buses would be able to meet at the transit center for essentially the equivalent of our current lineup. And in between, there would be a lot of transfer opportunities. Every 40 minutes, the 40-minute buses would also meet the 20-minute buses, and so forth. So we think that this would be an easier system to learn, an easier system to remember, an easier system for visitors to the city. And overall, sort of matches up with other modern systems they're doing. The other way we're looking to simplify is by saying, if it's worth going someplace, it's worth going there all day. Right now, many of our routes run a number of different what we call patterns. So the number 14, for example, has 10 different things it could do when it departs downtown with that number 14 on its sign. It could go through the hospital district, out past the zoo, and turn around at Rolling Acres. Continue out to downtown Barberton. It could continue past downtown Barberton. And the route can vary from about 6 miles to almost 15 miles. In order to break this up into understandable chunks that are also easier to keep on time, on schedule, and predictable, we're looking to break routes like this up into 5, 6, 7 mile lengths. So what we would do with this route is put it on a half-hour frequency from downtown to Rolling Acres, another route on a half-hour frequency with a time transfer here at Rolling Acres out to Barberton, and then link these outer Barberton loops together with a time transfer in downtown Barberton that are current up at 2nd and Tusk. This is probably the best example of how we could simplify by breaking routes up. But there are plenty of others throughout the proposal. So this is the piece that I'm really excited about, and I'm trying to move through this as quickly as possible. I know these are usually very short presentations. So this is our proposed network of 20-minute frequency routes. This is a proposal that's been around at least as long as our 2012 master plan, and what we're proposing are a bus every 20 minutes on these six corridors shown here. Now with our automatic passenger counter system, we're able to isolate and count our boardings per stop rather than just the route level. And when I pulled those numbers for April 2016, 68% of our boardings were within a quarter mile of these six yellow lines. So we think that increasing the frequency and increasing the service span on these routes will be a huge improvement for us, our existing customers, and it's likely to grow our ridership. So if you add the green lines on that proposed map, which would be the 30-minute network, we're approaching 90% of our current April boardings. We expect that 5% of our ridership would be negatively affected by this proposal, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a couple slides. But first, some more good news about that system. So right now, none of our system has 20-minute frequency. And there's a famous transit planner who likes to talk about frequency in this way. If you're not a bus rider, sometimes it's hard to wrap your head around what frequency is. Imagine there's a locked gate at the end of your driveway, and it only opens every half hour. That's essentially what a half hour frequency for the bus is. You cannot leave until that gate is open or the bus comes past your door. So right now we have no 20-minute frequency. Our 1 and our 2 average about 24 and 25 minutes. So 30 minutes or better, we touch about 24% of the jobs in the county. This is based on some data from the Hoover's service that collects jobs data. If we were to institute that 20-minute frequency network with the bold yellow lines on your map, we would reach with that 20-minute service frequency, about 34% of the jobs in Summit County. A huge improvement to job access. Right now, we know that less than 2% of Summit County residents are regular transit riders. That's not particularly surprising, given that we provide half-hour or better frequency to only 5% of the residents of the county. We implemented the 20-minute frequency network. We have that 20-minute service to almost 12% of county residents. I believe that that alone is likely to grow our ridership, just by bringing quality, high-frequency service in front of more doors. The other place that we always have to look is toward protected populations based on our rules from the FTA and the FHWA. So right now, we provide 30-minute or better frequency to 9.7% of minorities, 11% of low-income residents, and 4.6% of seniors. You can see that the 20-minute network as proposed would have huge improvements for all three of those protected populations. So this is essentially the bottom line slide. Right now, talking about those 1,022 revenue hours per day, we currently spend 77% of our time and our resources on our urban bus network, routes 1 through 34. And those routes generate 93% of our rides. We currently spend 11% of our resources on the purely suburban service, and that generates 2% of our rides. That's a mismatch that we've identified. Same thing with the circulator service. Our NCX, our express up to Cleveland with the big purple buses, does about what we think it should do. So the proposal essentially takes revenue hours from suburban and circulator service, and it creates hours by eliminating duplicated service, moves them into that urban category for a better match between resources spent and ridership gain. The tough news slide. About 5% of our customers we know will not like this proposal. We've already heard from many of them at 6 public meetings, on the phone, via email, via customer service. Breaking out, based on those April boardings, where these people are located by stop, the proposal would close 120 bus stops without a walking distance alternative. About 0.6% of our boardings for the month of April occurred at those stops that would close. We're currently exploring other options for those people, whether it's more sort of hollow bus service in far-flung areas of the county, van pools, all the other sorts of programs that transit has at its disposal that we don't do a whole lot with. But we really believe that these are areas where big bus all day long is not the solution and not where we should be spending our money. There's 177 bus stops that would close but would have more frequent service within a 2 or 3 block walk. So these are places like where Howard Street and North Main Street start to run together towards the Gorge Bridge. We'd be putting that high-frequency service on Main Street, taking service off of Howard and asking our customers to walk up to Main. So about 2% of our customers would have a situation like that. And these 273 stops where they would remain in place, the line would remain on the map, but we'd be reducing hours, would affect about 2.6% of our customers. So this is the final slide. It's just a table representation of the two maps in front of you. What I would direct your attention to, though, are these trips per day. Right now, we offer 38 trips on the number one, our most workhorse route on West Market. We'd be looking to increase that to 52 trips per day. Same thing across the board, either improvements or sort of static for most of our urban routes. And that's what we're looking to do, is put our resources in the places, the transit-supportive, walkable, dense neighborhoods that have really always been the places where transit operates best. And again, that aphorism that frequency is freedom, the more times you can come past the door, the more likely you are to get some part of the trip. So that's what I've got for you today, and thank you for your patience, and thank you for your attention, especially the Portage County people who this doesn't directly affect. I would say that we probably have a minute for sort of questions about the overarching project and our goals. If you'd like to talk to me about how this affects your particular community, find me at the end of the meeting, give me a call, shoot me an email. I know that myself, Chris, Richard, we're ready to talk to you. have stakeholders or people in your community that you think we should be talking to about this proposal, put me in touch with them. We're ready to talk transit to anyone who's about to listen, because we're about a year away from implementation on this project, and we've got essentially another 2 to 3 months for support, and then we've got to get down to the hard work of cutting a schedule off the proposal. So, do you have anything to add, Richard?
The only thing I'd like to add, you know, I'm familiar with this process, typically called a comprehensive operational analysis. Many transit systems pay consultants hundreds of thousands of dollars to do this kind of work. Alex and our planning director, Chris, have done this in-house using the data that we've generated ourselves, and they have done a fantastic job. And I also appreciate each of you who have participated in this and those that you know who have come to our meetings. The last thing I'll say is our board is really also very pleased with the process here. And we're sending a package to the board this week. Those packages are online. There will be a very detailed summary of all the public meetings. So if you want to know more about what the public said, feel free to visit our website or just look at our board packages. But yeah, terrific work, guys.
I'm glad you mentioned the website. The public meeting presentation and a lot of other materials are there. At akronmetro.org/driving-forward. The maps that are in front of you are the current and the proposal for daytime service. There's similar maps for evening. There shortly will be for weekend, and there's a special map for places where we're reducing service. So there's a lot more available online. This is something that you or others in your administration are interested in.
So any other questions? Just a comment. I've been to other cities. I've San Francisco last fall. This actually makes tremendous sense. I'm actually quite thrilled to hear what you're doing on this, because this is exactly what I mean. I go into Akron and I see buses empty all the time. I see bad frequencies. Realizing how long it takes people to get somewhere with bus routes, this is outstanding.
Thank you.
And everything you guys work on is point on what this transportation system has needed for a long time. So good work.
Thank you. I mean, we've got some tough choices to make over the next couple months, but I think that overall it's really moving in the right direction.
Do you have a question about the transfer?
Okay. All right. Well, thanks again for your time. And
thank you.
Like I said, if you do want to talk about your community specifically, I'm all there.
Thank you. Moving forward, item number 6. Resolution 2016-09, Connecting Community Planning Grant, Heather Davis-Bridle. Hearing none, motion carries. Thank you, Heather. Item 6B, Resolution 2016-10, approving Amendment Number 6 to the Transportation Improvement Program Fiscal Year 2016 to 2019 to add funds for the rehabilitation of buses for PARTA. Mr. Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This resolution seeks to add additional federal funds to the TIP for PARTA in fiscal year 2017 to an existing project. The purpose of PARTA's request is to extend the useful life of three of their current buses. These three buses are 35-foot buses built in 2005. The federal funds coming from the Federal Transit Administration are allocated to PARTA for capital purposes. PARTA does have the MS attributable funds and the local share available to expedite this request. This project will be funded at 80% federal share in the amount of $310,000 with a local share of $77,000. The total cost is $387,000 added to their existing preventive maintenance budget. This amendment will allow PARTA to extend the useful life of their current vehicle inventory and is cheaper than the purchase of three brand new buses. Resolution 2016-10 is consistent with the regional transportation plan, is financially constrained, air quality neutral, and meets requirements for public involvement and environmental justice. The staff is requesting approval of Resolution 2016-10, and the TAC is also requesting approval of this resolution. We would please answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Gardner? I will entertain a motion to approve Resolution 2016-10.
I'll move.
Second.
I have a motion. I have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. Hearing none. Motion carried. Item number 7, other business. I apologize for my tardiness. I don't like to do that, and I am deeply ashamed. I don't like to do that. I found myself on being on time, and that was out of character for me. Mr. Baker, you had something?
Yeah, sad news for AMATS while others gained. So I just wanted to announce that Krista Beniston from our staff, who presented on the bike plan today, after 8 years, took a job in Boardman Township. She resides in the Youngstown area, so it made sense. We had asked her to make that 2 hours of her day in the car for the last 8 years. We're very lucky to have her. I want to wish her the best. And also, Victor Bodison from our office, who runs the Transportation Improvement Program, is also leaving and transferring to the city of Akron. Dave Poulet will be taking over his duties with the Transportation Improvement Program, so when we're discussing funding projects and things like that, he will be your main contact at this point. Want to wish them both the best, and it's very strange timing that both of them are leaving on the same day, but unfortunately sometimes those things happen, and we are still just as good as ever, I promise. So no worries there, but just wanted to wish them both congratulations.
So does that mean you have to open?
If anybody's term limited or interested in come see me, there might be a couple of options. I'd be happy to work with all of you.
Sounds good. Our next regular meeting is Thursday, September 22nd, 2016, at 1:30 p.m. right here in this room at 1307 East Market Street in Akron. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
I have a motion. Do I have a second? I have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.